what we're doing, we went through 12 historical periods in the last quarter, last spring. And I had 12 preachers bring them, those historical periods to us. One introduction and then 12 historical periods. And the period between the Testaments is period number 13. We're going to have 14 and 15 about the life of Christ and then the history of the early church. And that's kind of how the sequence of classes will go. But there's so much about the life of Christ that to discuss that in 13 weeks, we would really be, we'd be cheating ourselves. I mean, we'd just kind of like skipping rocks over the top of it. And I feel like this class needs to go into more depth than that. So I want your feedback. This is what I'm thinking at this time, and you can offer suggestions that maybe that I'll take and accept as we get into this. Now, I would like to use multiple teachers again, but what you lose there is continuity. Like this class, I've got three teachers, but we got three subjects. I'm kind of talking about the events between the Testament. Tony will talk about cultural developments, and Kevin Key will be talking about literature between the test. So I can kind of divide it up like that. We might be able to do that with the life of Christ. But here's what I'm thinking. Three classes. One quarter, we will talk about the travels of Jesus. And really this will be talk about, you know, from Bethlehem to the ascension in heaven, the places where he was, but not just something to follow on a map, but really the sequence of events that occur in the life of Christ as he went through these places, and just kind of see if we can map that out and end with his ascension into heaven. The next quarter would overlap that, and we would talk about the teachings of Jesus. We won't be so much worried about the geography and the sequence of events and the Sermon on the Mount in Luke, in Matthew, that Sermon on the Plain in Luke, the parables, the discourses. I mean, there's just, and to get that in 13 weeks, the teacher will have to be selective to dwell on parts that really represent the teachings total, because you wouldn't be able to cover all of it. And then the third class, have a whole class, 13 weeks, on the last week of Jesus. You know, about a third of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, about a third of that deals with the last week. There's just so much jammed into that last week. And just spend a full quarter on that last week. And let those three cover the life of Christ. Now, there may be, I've looked at several ways to try to divide this and break this up and do it. I thought that might be the best way to do it. And I'm not sure who I'll ask to teach or how to divide up the teaching. So be thinking about that as well. What might be a good way to do that? It's a commitment to say, I'm going to come here and teach 13 weeks. I know that's a big commitment. And the teachers are all volunteer. And when any time I've ever asked anyone, you can tell they put a lot of work into what they're doing. And there's no pay. If someone comes from out of town, I give them a little bit of travel money, but it's probably not enough to cover their travel. It's just enough to soothe my conscience. Okay. So I sometimes think, should I really ask? Some of these, you know, preachers are busy. And who should I ask for that? But be thinking about those and give me some feedback, because I'd like to get a head start on it before January comes and get whoever's teaching it, give some time to start getting things ready on that.
I do have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm not going to try to teach.
Okay. Well, we won't ask you to do it.
Arlington normally has their 5 weeks, 4 or 5 weeks in January.
Yes.
So that wouldn't conflict with them, would it?
No, because
like Monday.
Theirs is on Monday.
Okay.
And Arlington has about a 5 week, 4 or 5 week class. There'll be 40 people in that class. And they feed you well. And it's a wonderful class if you want to go to that. And Justin likes to do it over a short period of time. He doesn't like to extend it out the 13 week, but there won't be a conflict. So if there is a conflict with something on Thursday night, well, you'll just have to miss it. It's hard not to have conflicts when we've got so many congregations with so many events, and I realize that. But let me get into the class now, and you'll be turning to Daniel chapter 7. This is one slide. What I'm doing, I'm going back and forth between scripture and history. I'm going to be kind of going back and forth as we look at between the testaments, with the idea that scripture tells us what happens between the testaments in prophecy. It's prehistory. It's fascinating that they were able to tell us what would happen before it took place. And then you look at history and you can see how it all took place. And there's so many just astounding stories, historical stories that kind of fill in the gaps that I'm going to be bringing us into as we continue to discuss this. But this is where we left off at the last class I was teaching, kind of looking at the history of things. This period between the Testaments, we say 400 years. That's an approximate figure, 400 years. This divides it out. I think there's about 360-something years here if you want to add it all up. But it covers the late Persian period. The early Persian period is part of the Old Testament. It's the late Persian period that gets into that between the Testaments time. And then the Greek era. And I've separated the Greek, Egyptian, and Syria era out because all of this is Greek. You might think of the Seleucid kings from Syria coming in. Well, that's the Syrians coming in. They were Greeks that were ruling over that area at that time. And that was Greek influence. And we're going to read about Antiochus Epiphanes that was trying to force Greek culture on people. And then the Ptolemy area, the Egyptians. Those Ptolemies were Greeks. They weren't Egyptians. They were the Greeks that were ruling Egypt, that were ruling over Israel. So I kind of set them all out. That's all the Greek era, but it comes first from Alexander the Great, who is really Macedonian, and then the Seleucid, or the Ptolemy kings, and then the Seleucid kings coming out of Syria. And then the Maccabean era, and that is what we'll... One of these times I'll be telling you that story. It is so fascinating how those Maccabees were able to throw off all the opposition, reclaim Jerusalem, cleanse the temple, and establish Jewish independence. So that period lasts about 100 years. And then you'll see the corruption. They had such idealistic motives at the beginning, and they were corrupted by the power. And then the Roman era. And that begins when Pompey comes into Jerusalem. And this is going to last then up to the time of Christ. And then we're getting into the New Testament era. So that's kind of the between the Testament periods on how that falls out. Now, since we're giving a lot of historical background, I'm going to talk about some things in the Persian area that's really within the Old Testament times, but it's going to be background information to what's happening in the Old Testament. And then I'm also going to be talking about some things in the Roman era that is in the New Testament, all the way into the book of Acts and even to the destruction of Jerusalem. We'll have to cover that. But it's all going to be historical background to what is going on that will bridge this gap between the Old Testament and the New Testament. Now, that's history. Let's get back to the Bible. We're going to be looking at Daniel 7. Daniel is a fascinating book. There's stories you learn from Daniel in Sunday school. That you know, Daniel in the lion's den. I mean, everybody knows the story of Daniel in the lion's den. And Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego in the fiery furnace. And Daniel begins, those first six chapters are chronological. That means chapter one happened, and chapter two happened, and chapter three happened, and it fits real well chronologically. I've highlighted that Daniel 2 because that's one that probably hasn't gotten as much attention. Daniel 2 does. That's the one with the head of gold, the breast and arms of silver, belly and thighs of brass, and the legs of iron and feet of iron and miry clay. And the stone made without hands is the image in the feet and then grew to encompass the whole earth. And so we talked about that really last week. The last class period. That's the story between the Testaments. The Babylonians, the Persians, the Greeks, the Romans, and the establishment of the church. I mean, that's all. So you've got the period covered. Now we're going to go a little deeper as we continue this. It's Daniel 4. It doesn't get a lot of attention, but I hope you remember Daniel 4. Nebuchadnezzar had the dream, and it was a great tree with all kind of fruits and the birds lighting it. And then it was cut down, and it bothered Nebuchadnezzar. What is this dream? And it says that out of the heart of that tree, it took the heart of a man and gave it the heart of a beast. What am I dreaming? Go get Daniel. He knows these dreams. And Daniel told him, he said, well, I'm going to tell you, Nebuchadnezzar says, you're that great tree, but you exalt yourself too much, and God's going to cut you down. And he'll give you the heart of a beast, and you'll be driven from men. And about a year later, Nebuchadnezzar's talking about all the great and mighty things that he has done. I did this, and I did that, and I've done this, and I've done that. And the Lord struck him, and he went crazy mentally. And they drove him from men. He was out in the grass, eating grass, fingernails growing, just like a beast. And that happened for a time, and Nebuchadnezzar was humbled. And at the end of this, the very last verse is the message that I want to keep in mind as we go through these stories. Now, this is Daniel 4:37. Now, I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of heaven, all of whose works are truth and his ways and judgments, and those that walk in pride he is able to abase. What we're talking about between the Testaments did not just happen. The King of heaven. God is referred to in Daniel several times as the King of heaven. He is over all of this, and he rules this. And so you got to remember, we're looking at things that occurred providentially. It's not that there are a lot of miracles, but there are some things that you just say, I could hardly believe that could have happened. And it did. And so we're going to be looking at providence. Well, then the writing on the wall. You remember that story? Belshazzar and the writing on the wall. Meanie. What is it? Tekel, Upharsin. And part of that meant you've been weighing the balances and found wanting. And this night the kingdom will be taken from you. And so that was the end of Belshazzar and the end of the Babylonian Empire. This one called Darius the Mede came in and took over. And there's a lot of question about who that is. I'm convinced it's Cyrus. And maybe I'll get into explaining how Cyrus, because Cyrus the Persian is also Darius the Mede. But you don't have to know that. You know, I may not get into that at all. But that's who I'm convinced it was. But I want you to note that's the end of Belshazzar's reign. And then the Persians are there, and they honor Daniel, and he is an old man. And yet he has more wisdom and skill than all these other advisors, and he's put over them. And they got jealous and worked up this scheme whereby he was being thrown into the lion's den. And you know the story of Daniel in the lion's den. Now that's brief. All that happened in sequence. But then you come to Daniel 7. In the first verse, in the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had dreamed a dream and visions of his head upon his bed. Then he wrote the dream and told the sum of the matters. The first year. Now you remember it was in Daniel 5 that Belshazzar lost his kingdom. So this is the first year. What you have to do, if you put this chronologically, Daniel chapter 7 falls between Daniel 4 and 5. The rest of the book is going to keep doing this to us. I mean, it's not in chronological order. And so I'm going to try to show you where those things fall in order. But now let's get into this vision that Daniel saw. It's going to reinforce some things we've already learned. It's going to tell us a little more about it. Here's when it begins. And I'm going to put the vision in three parts, okay? Part one. Daniel spake and said, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven strove upon the great sea. You see that in your mind? I've been out on the sea with hurricanes, out in the Gulf. And boy, the winds that blow and the waves rolling in. And it's just fascinating. Now they say the hurricane will be here in 2 or 3 days. So I'm not like right at the edge of the hurricane. But just to see what happens to the sea when the winds strive upon the waters. I want you to think of the sea, the troubled sea with the striving winds, as the turmoil in the world. I mean, the world's just in turmoil. Wind blowing one way, then another. That's north, south, east, and west. And the waters are troubled. So think of the people of the world all in turmoil. And out of this turmoil, this is what's going to come. And four great beasts came up from the sea, diverse one from the other. The first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. I got a note in the margin of my Bible. The king of beasts and the king of birds. Okay? The lion with eagle's wings. And I beheld till the wings thereof were plucked, and it was lifted up from the earth and made to stand upon the feet as a man, and a man's heart was given to it. Does that remind you of something? Well, we'll get back to that. And behold, another beast, a second, like to a bear. And it raised itself up on one side. And it had three ribs in its mouth of it, between the teeth of it. And they said thus to it, arise and devour much flesh. After this, I beheld, and lo, like a leopard, which had on the back of it four wings, as of a fowl. And this beast also had four heads, and dominion was given to it. After this I saw in the night visions, behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible and strong exceedingly, and it had great iron teeth. It devoured and brake in pieces and stamped the residue with the feet of it. It was diverse from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. And I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another little horn. This is horn 11, okay? Before whom there were three of the first horns plucked up by the roots. And behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of man, and a mouth speaking great things. Part two. And I beheld till the thrones were cast down, And the Ancient of Days did sit, whose garment was white as snow, and his hair of his head like pure wool, and his throne was like the fiery flame, and his wheels as burning fire. A fiery stream issued and came forth from before him. Thousands, thousands ministered unto him, and 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The judgment was set, and the books were opened. And I beheld then, because of the voice of the great words which the horn spake, I beheld even till the beast was slain, and his body destroyed, and given to the burning flame. As concerning the rest of the beast, they had their dominion taken away, yet their lives were prolonged for a season and a time. Notice that expression. Their lives were prolonged for a season and a time. I'm hoping to get back to that. Part 3. And I saw in the night visions, and behold, one like the Son of Man came with the clouds of heaven, and came to the Ancient of Days, and they brought him near before him. And there was given him dominion and glory and a kingdom, that all people, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away, and his kingdom that shall not be destroyed. Why, Daniel was grieved in my spirit in the midst of my body, and the visions of my head troubled me. I came near unto one of them that stood by and asked the truth of all this. He told me and made me know the interpretation of things. Now, this is what all these dreams mean in these two verses. You don't have to know all the details to know what this means. These great beasts, which are four kings, which shall arise out of the earth. But the saints of the Most High shall take the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, even forever and ever. Now, that's what the dream means. We're going to get a little more into the detail here, okay? Let's go into a little more detail. Go back to Daniel 7:4. The first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. This fresco was found at the gates of the ancient city of Babylon. It's not there. It's either in Germany or England or somewhere. They've got this, but they took it apart and put it back together. It's in Berlin, okay? This fresco. It's a lion with wings. This is talking about Babylon, this first beast. It said the wings were plucked. Remember how Nebuchadnezzar, he got thinking so much of himself. Have you ever heard somebody say somebody needs to pluck their wings? I mean, they just are flying too high for their little old sky. That's what happened to him. And you remember how he was given the heart of a beast, taking away the heart of a beast. The heart of a man, he given the heart of a beast. Well, here it says that he was made to stand on the feet as a man, and a man's heart was given to him. Nebuchadnezzar was humbled, wasn't he? That's why I wanted to go over that in that Daniel chapter 4. Behold, another beast, a second, like to a bear. He raised itself up on one side. Now, he's got kind of his paw raised. I got the idea that this bear's stronger on one side than the other, kind of. But anyway, it had three ribs in its mouth. Now, we know what comes next, don't we? After Babylon comes the Medes and the Persians. And the three ribs, well, let me speculate here, but they conquered Babylon and Lydia and Egypt. And so that might be the three ribs. It makes sense. It fits, doesn't it? Okay. And they said unto it, arise and devour much flesh. After this, I beheld and lo, like a leopard. Now, one thing a leopard's known for is it's fast. I mean, you get a leopard chasing you. I mean, the leopards are fast. And this one, so fast. This one has four wings. This is a souped up leopard. I mean, he can really go fast, okay? So this is a leopard that had on its back four wings of a fowl and four heads, and dominion was given to it. Well, we know what happened. Alexander the Great came on the scene, and I mean, just about 10 or 15 years, he had it done. He started in his early 20s, and is in his early 30s, he had the whole world conquered. He did it fast. But when he died, this great era was divided up among four kings. So there's your four heads there, isn't it? All right. After this, I saw the night visions, and you can use your own imagination. This looks kind of like a dinosaur rhinoceros or something, but the way they pictured it here, I don't know what it was, but this fourth beast was dreadful and terrible and strong exceedingly, had great iron teeth. Kind of reminds me of that fella on James Bond that had the iron teeth, you know. Okay, had Charles, okay, he had great iron teeth. It devoured and brake in pieces and stamped the residue with the feet of it and was diverse from all the beasts and before it and had 10 horns. Rome comes next. That was the legs and feet of iron. Now it's iron teeth. So we got the iron associated with Rome. So this is what happens between the testaments. Now, it compares to that image, doesn't it? And I think this chart's a pretty good chart. Babylon, head of gold, and the lion. The Medes and Persians, there's your buyer. Breast and arms. The belly and thigh, well, there's your Greeks, the leopard with the wings. And then Rome, legs of iron. And then here's another dinosaur looking kind of thing, some kind of fierce beast. And there's your Roman Empire. So Daniel's telling us again what's going to happen between the testaments. Now, I'm going to go into the rest of this vision. It gets more complicated as we go. But let's see if we can understand it. I'm going to go back to Daniel 7:12, though. You remember when I said, remember this? Their lives were prolonged for a season and a time. One of the ways you might think about that is the influence of those kingdoms. They laid down things that continued after the kingdom was gone. And one I read suggested these things, and there may be others, but it was during the Babylonian Empire that the Jews started meeting, gathering together in synagogues, which really means assembly, to study the law. And that continued. Even after Babylon fell, we read this about synagogues into the New Testament. The Persians, you're going to read several times about the law of the Medes and the Persians, and even the emperor was under the law. He couldn't change it once he made a decree. That's why Daniel had to go in the lion's den. And the Persians really brought about this idea of rule by law instead of rule by man. That continues into the Roman times. And then you got the Greeks, and what they did, they took their language. Now, they really took their whole culture, but they took their language all over the Eastern Mediterranean and into Israel. The New Testament is written in this Greek language. He gave all the people in that area the same tongue and facilitated the teaching then of the gospel. And then you got Rome, and what did Rome bring? They brought stability. The Pax Roma, it was an imposed stability, but Augustus, he really, I tell you, the sea calmed. Those four winds striving on the sea, it's like, peace be still. And I tell you, everything calmed down. And travel became something you could do by ship and by roads. And so the Romans brought that into play. So each of these things that God is doing between the testaments is preparing the world for the coming of Christ and his kingdom. And that may be what it's talking about when it says things are prolonged a season at a time. I can't be dogmatic about some of these things, like some of the commentaries I read get real emphatic on that, but I think that sounds pretty good. That might be right. It might be right. There might be something else there that I'm missing. Now, see if we can get through this. I think I can. Daniel says, all right, that sounds pretty good. What about the rest of this? Well, then I would know the truth of the fourth beast, which was diverse from all others, exceeding dreadful, whose teeth were iron and his nails of brass. Now you learn a little more about that beast. Which devoured and rake in pieces and stamped the residue of his feet, and of the 10 horns that were in his head, and of the other which came up, before whom 3 fell, even of that horn that had eyes and a mouth and spake great things, whose look was more stout than its fellows. I'd like to know about that. Well, I kind of wondered about that too when I heard that. What is all this? Well, I beheld in the same war made war with the saints and prevailed against them. Remember this. Until the Ancient of Days came, and judgment was given to the saints of the Most High, and the time came that the saints possessed the kingdom. Thus he said, the four beasts shall be the fourth kingdom upon the earth. So that's Rome. Which shall be diverse from all kingdoms, and shall devour the whole earth, and shall tread it down and break it in pieces. And the 10 horns of this kingdom are 10 kings that shall arise, and another shall arise after them. He's number 11. And he shall be diverse from the first, and he shall subdue 3 kings. And he shall speak great words against the Most High, and shall wear out the saints of the Most High, and to think to change times and laws, and they shall be given into his hand until the time and times and the dividing of time. That time, times, divide, think 3.5, okay? 3.5, but I'm not going to get too far into 3.5 tonight, okay, what that might mean. He changed the times and laws. You know, Julius Caesar rewrote the calendar, the Julian calendar. Gregory later did. We're under the Gregorian calendar now. But Caesar, that might be one of the, he changed the times. He changed the months around. Started the year starts different now. And he just changed it up. That's how powerful those Caesars were. And that may be what that's talking about there. Let's get into this. Here were the first 13 rulers of Rome insofar as the Jews are concerned. Pompey came in and took Jerusalem. Some would start counting with Pompey and count 10 down to Vitellius. And then number 11 is Vespasian, and he's the great horn. And the reason that seems to fit so well is because these three kings, Galba, Otho, and Vitellius, they just reigned a few months. And you'd have all these Caesars reigning over years. And then these three, they didn't last long. And so that's like, okay, here comes Vespasian, and he, after 3, real quick, then he comes to power, and that seems to fit that. Now, that's history that seems to fit the 10 horns. It may be those 10. Others say, no, we got to start with Augustus. He's the first emperor. He's the first emperor. So you count 10 emperors as 10 kings, and you get down to Titus, and the next is Domitian, and Domitian... is the one that really brought the church under persecution. And so some people think it's that. And others say, oh, don't worry about 10. Don't worry about 10. You don't have to count them. 10 is just a number. It's kind of a figurative number. There's going to be a good number of kings, and then there's going to be another one, and you don't really have to count them like that. And maybe so. But it does work out two different ways. And I'm not going to try to settle that tonight. But the 10 kings, 10 horns, having to do with the rulers there. Now, Daniel 7. I'm afraid this thing, I wish I knew like you. Okay, judgment shall sit, and they shall take away his dominion, consume and destroy it to the end. But now here's verse 27. And the kingdom and dominion and the greatness of the kingdom under the whole heaven shall be given to the people of the saints of the Most High, whose kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and all dominion shall serve and obey him. Now this is the stone made without hands that outgrew all the kingdoms. That we're talking about the kingdom of heaven now. This is talking about the church coming now. And verse 28, hitherto's the end of the matter. In other words, I bet Daniel had a lot of questions too at this point. But this is the end of the matter. As for me, Daniel, my cogitations much troubled me. Now, the more I thought about this, more it worried me. And my countenance changed in me, but I kept the matter in my heart. Daniel 7. This is a good time to break for our refreshments. So.